Welcome to the Food Matters Live podcast, where we showcase the innovations, the big ideas, and the visionaries in the food industry. We dig deep, we look to the future and the past, and we question everything that we think we know about food. I'm Stephen Gates. I'm a food science writer, TV presenter, and a gastronaut. Now, the link between nutrition and our skin is complex. Various claims and inferences have been made, and new products are constantly being developed and marketed. Yet a review in the Journal of Cosmetic Dermatology found that the data on the link between them isn't well supported, and that this often leaves medical professionals and patients confused and uncertain. Now, recognising that diet and skin could be better understood, Dr. Thivi Marathapu pioneered the field of nutritional dermatology. As the UK's first dual-qualified dermatologist and nutritionist, she views the skin as having a direct connection to our internal health, in which diet plays a huge role. So, how exactly are skin and nutrition related? How does nutritional dermatology differ from conventional medicine? And how could this help improve the treatment of skin conditions? I am delighted to welcome to the podcast the marvellous Dr. Thivi Marathapu.
Thank you, Stefan. Lovely to be here.
Fantastic to have you. A consultant dermatologist, nutritionist and researcher. Now, the skin is said to be the body's largest organ. A, is that true? I mean, there's lots of different ways of cutting it, I suppose. But what's it for? What's it made of? And how does it interact with the rest of our bodies?
Indeed it is. And I'm obviously a total skin geek, so I love the skin. It's my favourite organ, obviously. But it's one that we often overlook. And not like our heart or our lungs. We don't really judge it on how well it's performing. We judge it on how it looks. And that is really the primary outcome when we think about our skin. So we want to know, is it smooth? Is it blemish-free? We're not thinking, is it protecting us from the world around us? Is it sensing pain, temperature? Is it helping to regulate our temperature? It's doing all of these things all the time, but we don't really think about those things. We're more interested in how it's looking.
So generally, when consumers talk about skin and nutrition, or are talked to about skin and nutrition by magazines and advertising, do you think they're really interested in specific conditions or functions? Or is there really a more nebulous social media-based beauty chasing idea about this sort of idea of clean, youthful, glowing skin? Or indeed, are the two just inextricably linked?
So I think there is this gross generalisation that a clean diet is clean skin and you eat healthy and you have healthy skin. But actually, it's so much more nuanced than that. Yes, a nutritious, balanced diet is important for the fundamentals of skin health. We need all those different components in our diet. But when it comes to individual skin concerns, whether you're dealing with acne, eczema, rosacea, really common skin concerns, nutritional advice is really tailored and targeted. So it isn't one size fits all. It really has to address what you're dealing with.
Yeah. Now, I mean, I get psoriasis. It used to be much, much worse than it is now. And I found that the cure really was not to worry about it so much, which is easy to say and hard to do, especially when you're a teenager. But what things, what foods and what sort of nutritional elements can disrupt the normal function of skin?
So if we are lacking in certain nutrients, our skin can be the first sign that we're going to see that. So if you are deficient in certain micronutrients, let's say iron, you might get dry, itchy, scaly skin. If you're missing good fats in your diet, enough healthy fats, again, that can contribute to skin dryness because those are needed to keep your skin barrier functioning well. We know that vitamin D is not only made in the skin, but it plays an important role in the function of our skin. And so in conditions like psoriasis, we use creams containing vitamin D to treat it. But we also need to make sure that you're not having low vitamin D levels as well. So that's what I mean by this nuanced role of diet with skin that really isn't this sort of, this is the perfect diet, you're going to have perfect skin, which I think is a very easy sort of concept to portray in the media.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you're a dual-qualified dermatologist and nutritionist. Fantastic. Well done, first of all. Yeah. But I just wondered, what's the body of evidence in this field? How much research has been done into the link between nutrition and skin? Or are we at the, sort of, the start of the journey of finding out?
So it's actually a fascinating area of research. And when I first got into this little niche, I was just sort of tiptoeing around the edges. But the more I studied, the more I found that actually there were lots of studies that had been done and that we needed to bring this sort of data to the fore so that we could answer these questions that people who live with skin concerns ask us all the time. And certainly we need better quality research. And that's something that we're focusing on in our group at King's, where we focus on the role of diet in various skin conditions. Definitely we need need larger studies, but nutrition studies are notoriously hard to carry out.
And
but
expensive.
There are lots of they're very expensive, and it's difficult to get them funded. In fact, much easier to get a new medication funded than a trial to look at healthy eating, for example, on certain skin concerns. But there is also the new area of the gut-skin link and the gut microbiome and that's influence on skin health. And I would say in dermatology, we're a little bit behind the research that's happened in other areas on the role of gut health, but we are really working hard to improve this body of research.
So how does nutritional dermatology, which is your field, intersect with traditional dermatology treatments? And is there a major difference in your approach to dealing with certain conditions?
So not at all, in fact. So I look at a holistic approach, and I think this is becoming much more commonplace now. So I look at diet, but I also look at lifestyle and stress as an influence on skin conditions. I use skincare products and I use medical treatments as well. So I use the whole gamut. And those are the four steps I talk about a lot in my book. So it's using all of those four steps together. It's not saying diet's going to cure all your skin woes. It's saying it's a piece of the puzzle and here's how you address it.
Yeah. So are there any key nutrients that have a direct connection and contribute to skin health? And how well established are those links?
So there are, but it depends on your skin concerns. So if we take, for example, psoriasis, which we've been talking about already today. So there seems to be a role for gluten in psoriasis, but it doesn't appear to be the same for everyone. So if you're somebody who has gluten intolerance, you have blood tests that show that gluten may be an intolerance for you, then removing gluten from your diet could help your psoriasis. Whereas if you're someone in whom those blood tests, for example, celiac blood tests, are negative, then you can eat gluten. So there are specific food groups that may be relevant depending on your skin condition.
And just for another couple of real specifics here, can you explain the potential impact of sugar consumption on skin aging and the development of wrinkles, which I would imagine is quite a recurring recurring subject. And are there any alternatives or strategies to mitigate these effects?
Yes, so it's a phenomenon that's known in the literature as sugar sag. So having lots
sugar
of refined
sag. Oh my
sugar,
gosh.
I know.
So damning, isn't it?
I know, whoever coined that. But yeah, so high intake of refined sugars can contribute to a process called glycation, which causes collagen fibers in the skin, which we all want to keep our collagen as bouncy and as youthful for as long as possible. It causes those collagen fibers to become stiff. And when they're stiff, they don't really hold their structure as well. And we think that might be the mechanism behind this process called sugar sag. So I love sugar as much as the next person. I'm certainly not going to live without it. And I'm not a sugar fiend. But I think it's important to moderate it and be careful how much you have. And think about when you have your sugar as well. So if you're combining that sweet treat at the end of a meal, it's much less likely to cause your blood sugar to become elevated more quickly. And those are little tricks that you can do to moderate the amount of refined sugar that your collagen is being exposed to.
Yeah. So another question along the same lines really is, are there lots of common misconceptions or myths about nutrition and its effects on the skin that you frequently encounter in your practice?
All the time. And I would say acne is the biggest one. So I have so many people with acne who get told, you need to go on a detox, you need to go on a cleanse and your acne will be cured. And there is no evidence to support this at all. There are foods that can trigger acne for some people. So for some people, sugar can be an issue. For some people, milk and some dairy products can be an issue. But that certainly isn't the case for everyone. There's a whole other group of people who can try cutting all of these foods from their diet and their acne will still be there. And they need medical skincare, they need medical treatment. And I see a lot of people like that in the clinic and they'll come in and say, look, I've been on a cleanse for 6 weeks. I'm not having gluten, caffeine, sugar. I've cut out everything, but my acne is the same. So I think that understanding that we all respond to food differently. Yeah, and being really kind about that, because I think I've definitely seen people with acne who've had really stigmatizing comments saying, well, that's because you're eating rubbish. And they come to clinic and say, people just assume I eat really bad food and I really don't. Yeah. And knowing that there are other things such as genetics and hormones, which play a really important role in the health of our skin.
And out of interest, what are the most reported problems? Is it acne and eczema?
So the commonest skin concerns that I would see in the clinic, acne, definitely. And adult acne is much more common than people realize. But eczema as well. So eczema in children, it's less common in adults. About 1 in 10 adults will have some sort of eczema. But I see lots of rosacea and psoriasis as well. Yeah. So I see all of
those.
Got
it all going on.
Yeah.
Oh, lovely. Now, let's talk about your work. You partnered with King's College in forming a research group focused on nutrition and skin. And I believe the group consists of dermatologists, nutritionists, dietitians. How have you gone about marrying these separate areas of expertise? And is it a herding cats kind of scenario where you're trying to get people to work together and they're sort of pulling apart? Or is it easier to achieve?
Do you know what, Stefan? It's completely the opposite. It's like we've always been destined to work together, but we've just never had the chance before. And we learn so much from each other. And I just can't believe how lucky I am. I have amazing colleagues that I work with at King's. Our research is funded by the Psoriasis Association. It's the first study that they've ever funded in diet. And the reason they funded it is because that was the number one question that people with psoriasis had in their research of their participant members. So we were really fortunate to get the funding, and our team came together very organically, and it has just grown. So we have junior doctors who join us regularly, medical students, nutrition and dietetics trainees. We are really fortunate that the interest in it has become so much so that we haven't had to advertise for help. We are bombarded with requests to join our studies all the time.
Mm. And are studies into skin conditions well-funded? You know, because my psoriasis, it used to be really quite upsetting, but it's not now. It's not life-threatening for me. I can imagine that it's not at the top of a research funder's list for putting money into. Do you find that? Is it underfunded, or is actually, do you get quite a lot of interest from beauty companies?
Well, there is that, but there is also a lot of interest in funding skin research, because if you think about it, the skin is really visible. The skin conditions are hugely stigmatizing, and I think we can't underestimate the mental health impact of
triggers for depression, absolutely, and anxiety.
Absolutely. I've had people coming to clinic practically suicidal because of their skin conditions. So I think that funders are much more aware of that. The other thing is that what we learn from the skin, we can translate to other conditions as well. So by examining, for example, atopic eczema, we can learn more about mechanisms underlying allergy. For example, when we examine psoriasis, we can learn much more about even psoriatic arthritis as well. So linked conditions. So it's using the skin, which is this easy point of access, this easy organ to examine. It's right there. Don't need to do a scan or anything like that. Just have a look. Yeah. So it's using that to our advantage. So from that point of view, we are fortunate that we do receive funding, but it is difficult and the research has to be very high quality.
Yeah, absolutely. So has anything come from the group so far? Anything you can tell us about?
I can't say yet. No, we're still recruiting. I know, soon. So we're still recruiting for our study. It's called the Apple Study, asking people with psoriasis about lifestyle and eating. So we have a survey that we're still collecting data from. And the second part of a study is a clinical trial where we allocate people with psoriasis to 3 different dietary interventions. And we look at the impact on their skin, their blood tests, and we want to see whether these dietary interventions could be helpful for people.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Now, this is a food industry podcast, so I wouldn't mind having a little chat about the food and supplements industry, because the supplements crop up a lot in discussions here.
Oh, yes, they do. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So many skin products out there, and some feel like they're more part of a wellness trend than reputable nutrient sources or evidence-based interventions. How do you feel about the use of supplements for skin health? And is this an industry that is actually providing any real solutions for people?
So in all honesty, I think the role for supplements is vastly overplayed. In my practice, I use supplements very specifically and in a targeted way, depending on what a patient's diet is like, what condition that we're trying to treat. So it's very specific and tailored to that individual. I don't recommend blanket supplementations. And I certainly don't take blanket supplements myself. I have to say, as a medical student, I took everything because I just thought, more the better. The more I've learned about nutrition, actually, the fewer supplements I take. And my preference is always to get nutrition from food.
And a lot of these things are advertised in I mean, I don't quite know best how to describe it, but I'd say it's slightly insidious way, where you have a photo of a beautiful model or TV presenter, and all you have is the dialogue saying, great for the support of healthy skin. Now, I would say that the inference is, take this product, you'll look like Gandhi, and it'll be, you'll be a beautiful person, and that's a pretty direct connection. I mean, do you think it's a bit cheeky the way that things are advertised?
Well, I think, you know, that's how these products are sold, aren't they? There is evidence that you will need certain micronutrients to support skin health, but there is a baseline that we all require. And the question is adding more than what we need going to give us any added advantages? And from my study of the literature, I don't see that to be the case.
And do you find a lot of your patients necking a fair amount of supplements and you kind of think, oh, I mean, you're really just hemorrhaging money there?
Well, they turn up with bagfuls. So they'll put the bag of supplements on the desk and I have to, you know, I have to wade through all of that and say,
oh,
look, you know, I wouldn't actually continue with these. You know, don't waste your money buying these anymore. You know, there are specific situations where I think supplements are important. For example, if someone is following a vegan or vegetarian diet, you need to supplement B12. You need to think about an omega-3. And I see people who have maybe not realized that that's important and they come with hair shedding or they come with dry skin. And that's really easy to remedy. And we know exactly why that supplement is being used, you know, and those are the sorts of situations that I really, you know, will recommend supplements for periods of time. But really, we want to be getting our supplements or nutrients through our diet. You know, there's
absolutely
so much more benefits to that.
Eat better with real food rather than a pill, I guess. Okay, now you mentioned the gut microbiome earlier on. How does gut health influence skin health? And what role do probiotics and prebiotics play in maintaining a healthy gut-skin axis? Is that a thing, the healthy gut-skin axis? We've talked a lot about healthy gut-brain axis, but is there a gut-skin axis?
There is, and it was coined by a colleague of mine up in Manchester, Professor Cathy O'Neill. She coined that term many years ago, in fact, but it's gaining traction now. And I think there's a lot of interest in the gut-skin axis. And essentially what that means is the influence of our gut microbiome on skin health and the skin microbiome. And that is a really interesting area where we're just starting to really understand that. There is some data for eczema, psoriasis, a little bit for acne, a little bit for rosacea. And I would say the area where we understand the gut-skin axis most is in relation to eczema. And there are some early studies that show if your gut microbiome is less diverse, you are more likely to develop eczema later on. And these are studies in small children. And there are even some very early recommendations now that mothers who are pregnant with babies who are at high risk of developing eczema, for example, if they've got lots of people in their family or if they've got siblings with eczema, that it might even be worth taking a probiotic during pregnancy and for the baby as well for the first 6 months of life.
And kissing the dog.
Yes, yeah, getting your gut microbiome improved in lots of other ways.
Okay, so those are, again, those are quite specific conditions we're talking about here. Whereas, again, I would imagine that a lot of people are really concerned about wrinkles.
Yes.
We've talked a little bit about collagen before. I mean, is this just an obsession? Is it just a word that's bandied around? Are there specific nutrients or dietary components that are particularly beneficial for promoting collagen production and maintaining skin elasticity?
Well, number one, so collagen, how can we protect our collagen most? We need to protect ourselves from the sun, religious sunscreen. That's a no-brainer. But if through your diet, we also have recent studies which have shown that diet's really important. So having an antioxidant-rich diet, so lots of colourful fruits and vegetables, plays a role in protecting our skin from the early signs of ageing. And there's been some really lovely studies done, published in high-level journals, that support this. But I always get asked about collagen supplements, and I think they're really rather intriguing. And I think for a long time they were dismissed, but I'm a little bit curious about them. I think there might be something to them.
There are a few reports have come out, yes. And some people started saying, maybe we shouldn't be quite so dismissive. Yeah,
I've taken them myself. I thought, let me try and let's see what all this fuss is about. And obviously tried to be a little guinea pig. I thought they helped with my skin hydration. I didn't see much improvement in wrinkles personally, but I thought they could be helpful for hydration. And I think the literature does support that to be the case. So I think they are worth trying. I think you could try them for a couple of months, maybe 3 months, to see if you notice a difference. But if you don't continue with them because they're expensive.
Absolutely. So what advice is there that you give to individuals, generally speaking, who are interested in incorporating a more skin-friendly diet into their lifestyle, but they don't quite know how to start? Because as I hear what you say, you're often dealing with very specific cases of very specific problems with people who may be genetically predisposed. I understand all of that. But is there also some overarching nutritional advice that you just give to everyone? And you kind of think, come on, people, just do this for crying out loud.
Definitely. So I have a very, you know, easy acronym that I developed just for my patients in the clinic. So it doesn't matter what you're coming to me with. This helps people to just eat a little bit better for skin health. And it's a little bit cheesy, Stefan. It's GLOW, G-L-O-W. So easy to remember. So it starts with greens, and it doesn't just mean eat your greens. It's essentially, I mean, eat plenty of your fruits and vegetables. So make sure that is in every meal that you have, you're having some sort of fruit and vegetable, as many as you can. And not only is that good for skin health, but that's important for your gut health as well. Lean protein is the L, and that could be chicken, fish. It could be vegan, vegetarian sources as well.
Yeah,
because the skin is primarily made up of amino acids and proteins. So we need to ensure that we are consuming enough of those to meet its needs. O is oils and healthy fats. So we need our lovely, nutritious, healthy fats, whether that's from avocados or healthy oils or oily fish. And that is to support the skin barrier and as an anti-inflammatory. And the W is whole grains. And those are something that people often try to remove from their diet. But actually, whole grains have lots of important micronutrients and are one of the favorite foods for our gut bacteria. So GLOW, I think, is a really easy way to think about a balanced plate of food.
Absolutely. Now, you've got a new book coming out called Skin Food. Tell us a little bit about the book. Why is it different from what's out there at the moment? And what are you hoping that readers will take away from it?
So I wrote the book because wherever I worked, and I work in the NHS, I work privately, and I give a lot of lectures, I noticed that people were asking me the same type of questions. So I thought, everybody's asking me the same thing. Everybody from any walk of life, they just want to know these things. Is chocolate causing my spots? And sometimes people will wait to the end of a talk and come up and they'll say, well, do you think I should go gluten-free for my eczema? And I realized that these were just very common themes. And I'm fortunate that I have an academic background. And I thought, well, I can do the research and I can help to answer these questions for people. I'm very aware that NHS dermatology services are under pressure and difficult to access at the moment. And so I wanted to make the guide as comprehensive as possible so that people could do as much for themselves as they can, but also so that they know when they need help, when do they need to see their doctor, and what options could be offered for them. So it was to empower them to not only take care of themselves, but know what medical options are out there as well.
Excellent. Okay. Give it a plug. When is it going to be available, and who should be buying it? Well, obviously, other than everybody on the planet.
Everybody with skin should be buying it.
Everyone with skin.
So it's coming out on the 22nd of June, and it's published by Piatkus Little Brown. And it is for anyone who's wondered that. It's your dermatologist in a pocket. Yeah. It has answers everything from diet to how to choose a skincare routine. You know, we're bombarded with products, but what really works for what you're worried about? You know, for anti-aging, what are the ingredients that really work and what should you be looking for? And of course, it also covers all the medical treatments that we offer, in-office treatments, lasers, light treatment, all of that. So it's just an all-round approach, a really holistic approach to skin health.
I think it's clearly going to be a smash hit. Now, I wonder, when you sit down for dinner with a bunch of people that you don't necessarily know that well, do you keep quiet about the fact that your job is as a nutritional dermatologist for fear of just being consumed by the braying mob asking for advice?
Well, it's difficult. I get shown body parts at dinner parties all the time. Like, oh, could you just have a quick look at this mole? This is my cousin's rash that he's got in the back of his hand. Can you have a look? So that is kind of, you know, curbside dermatology is par for the course. But if I can help, you know, I'm fortunate that mine is a visual specialty. And if I can safely offer help, then I always will. But if they need to see someone, then I'll tell them too. Yeah. But sometimes I get a bit concerned about my own plate of food because I'm a very, you know, a relaxed eater. I like eating everything. And I think that there's room for everything. I'm not one of these sort of, I only eat, you know, protein and greens. You know, I'm not a strict person like that. I love eating everything. Yeah. I'm a real foodie. So it's more I get worried. People are thinking, I thought she was meant to be a nutritional dermatologist and she's having ice
what's
cream.
This GLOW thing and she's necking fish and chips. So my penultimate question is, how have we got through half an hour of an interview without you commenting on how beautiful my skin is and how glowing I am? I mean, obviously I'm a sweaty, pockmarked old wrinkle, but
you look very radiant today.
Oh, thank you, darling. That's right. can you just comment on, you know, do you do clinics online? And can you, as you say, it's a visual aspect. Can you just look at somebody's skin and get most of the information from that? Or is it a combination combination of medical history, genetics.
Yeah, it's a story. It's so helpful. The story tells you a lot because some rashes look really similar and it will be the story that gives you the clues. But one of the things I love most about the skin is actually it can tell you a lot about what's going on inside. So someone might show me something around their eyes and actually my answer to that is not what they're expecting. It's like, actually, you might have high cholesterol and you better go and have a blood test. So your skin is talking to you and it can tell you so much about your internal health. And I think that's one of the most beautiful aspects of the skin that people often forget about.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure that anyone listening to this will be thinking, so what does Vivi look like? And I can put you all at rest. She's gorgeous. Okay, last question. But that's not important because we're talking about clinical nutrition here. So what's next for the field of nutritional dermatology? Are there any innovative approaches or emerging research that you find particularly exciting or promising?
Well, I'm really excited that we're going to be doing some research into acne and the effect of diet on acne and how we individually respond to foods and how that may influence whether or not you develop acne or not. So I think that will be a really interesting piece of research, going to answer some very important questions that people have always asked about, but also looking at the mental health aspect of skin. And I think that is something that is going to be a focus of research for many years to come.
Yeah, fantastic. Okay, well, Dr. Thivi Marathupi, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much, Stefan.
I hope you enjoyed that episode of the Food Matters Live podcast. Now, we'd like you to join us in our new initiative, Sustainable Food Week, where we're celebrating the influential people changing the future of food. There are a number of ways to get involved. We've got a digital digest, an in-person forum, and podcast opportunities. It's happening between the 18th and 24th of September. But if you want to be involved, you need to act now. Find out more on the Food Matters Live website or email us at info@foodmatterslive.com. And thank you so much for listening.